This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The end of another summer is all too near. Soon, beaches around the Great Lakes will be empty, or at least no one will be swimming. But this summer has brought with it more drownings in Great Lakes waters. The public radio collaborative Great Lakes Today has examined how drownings happen and the efforts to prevent them. We're going to hear their four-part series, but first we're joined by reporter Elizabeth Miller, who produced the series for Great Lakes Today. She joins us from IdeaStream in Cleveland. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what made you decide to tackle this issue of drownings in the Great Lakes?
So here in Ohio, there are a lot of what are called swim-at-your-own-risk beaches, so beaches without lifeguards. And I started looking at a couple of them, and I noticed that they didn't have lifeguards, but they were also near, one, for example, was near a power plant. And I thought of the safety ramifications of that. And that kind of got me thinking about how many beaches across the Great Lakes don't have lifeguards and what kind of risk that poses.
Does knowing how to swim or being a strong swimmer guarantee you anything or mean that you won't drown?
No, it does not at all, especially in the case of these dangerous currents. A lot of the people I spoke with mentioned that you can be the strongest swimmer, but if you're knocked off your feet by a rip current, for example, your swimming doesn't really help you. It's all about staying calm at that point.
So how big a problem, if you're going to try to put numbers on it, statistics, that sort of thing, would you say that drowning on the Great Lakes is?
Well, it varies from year to year, but and there's no official reporting done on this, but a couple of people do track this. One of them is the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, and they track not only drowning deaths from currents, but all drowning deaths, all deaths in a Great Lake. This year, so far, the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project's executive director, Bob Pratt, says that we're at 69 in 2016, which is higher than 2015.
This year, we're right about the same pace that we were 2012 with respect to water temperature warming up and the number of drownings that we're seeing.
You've mentioned that there are certain areas which may be more dangerous than others, but also there are years, as we find out in your stories, where drownings seem to go up. Do people have a grasp on what conditions bring about more drownings or greater risk of drownings?
Well, a lot of it is with these warm summers we have. Warm summers, the Great Lakes are warmer. They're just better conditions for currents to develop, better chances for currents to develop. And also with these warmer summers, you, of course, have more people out there in the Great Lakes, which is more inexperienced swimmers and more chance for danger to happen.
Elizabeth, stand by. We're going to hear more from you in a little bit. That's Elizabeth Miller. She is a reporter with IdeaStream in Cleveland, and we're going to hear her four-part series on the dangers of drowning on the Great Lakes, produced for Great Lakes Today. Melissa Zirkel grew up near Lake Erie, but didn't learn about the dangerous currents in the Great Lakes. She lost her son to a powerful current in 2013, and now she's made it her goal to educate others about these dangers.
In her family's backyard overlooking Lake Erie, Melissa Zirkel watched as her son Jermaine joined some friends in the water. On that July day in 2018, she was building steps in the backyard, and
I kept looking and checking on him, and he was standing in the water and he was laughing, you know, having fun with the other kids, and then about 2 minutes later, I heard cries for help.
Jermaine was 14 and knew how to swim, but he got caught in a strong current near a structure that juts out into the water.
Two of the other kids tried to help him, and they just couldn't keep a hold of him throughout all that. So he went under. He was missing for 3 days.
The U.S. Coast Guard and water rescue teams from the area joined in the 60-hour search for Zirkel's son. She describes that time as a nightmare. Jermaine's body resurfaced shortly after the search was called off.
Jermaine was always very smart and very inquisitive. He always wanted an explanation for everything. He had dreams of going to Harvard, and those dreams started when he was about seven. He wanted to go to Harvard, and He was just very funny. He liked to tell jokes. He liked to make faces. He liked to do silly things with his afro just to make people laugh.
Zirkel grew up near Lake Erie, but never learned about the dangerous currents. Like many people, she didn't know about structural currents that develop along piers or about rip currents that form in a break in a sandbar. both can quickly pull people into deep water. And after Jermaine died, she hated the lake until she refocused that hate into ambition.
I set a new goal, and that was to educate as many people as I can about water safety and rip currents and structural currents and Lake Erie in general.
Now she's a board member of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, which teaches water safety classes and trains lifeguards.
There's so many things that I wish I had known, you know, before Jermaine's accident. It could have been prevented.
She's also extremely careful when it comes to the safety of her other son. Quandrell is 15 years old.
You don't go in the water without life jackets, ever. We do walk along the shore. You know, I don't make him wear a life jacket for that, but he knows we don't go in without life jackets. We have a canoe. We actually go out on a canoe. We only go out when it's very calm and we don't go out far.
Her newest goal is to put warning signs about dangerous currents up at her private beach. She also wants to reach out to both private and public beaches about having life jacket loaner stations. These days, she lives in the house on Lake Erie, the site of her son's death.
I like the lake. I like the calmness. And since Jermaine's accident, I kind of have a new peace here, and I feel closer to him here. And it's just, my heart is here.
And here she holds an annual ceremony on the day Jermaine drowned. She calls it an angelversary. This year, she celebrated the third. 30 or so guests attended the event, including family and friends of Jermaine.
We gather, we say prayer, and then we throw flowers in the water where he went in. And just a nice way to get together and remember Jermaine and talk about his life and share memories.
Zirkle carries her own memories of Jermaine every day. Around her neck, she wears a glass locket with Jermaine's picture on one side and a lock of his hair on the other. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Elizabeth Miller.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're bringing you a four-part series today on drownings in the Great Lakes. Since 2002, powerful currents in the Great Lakes have caused more than 150 drownings, researchers say. We have a look at the science behind the currents from Elizabeth Miller at IdeaStream in Cleveland.
During the summer, Lake Michigan gets a lot of media attention.
Breaking news right now from Northwest Indiana. At least two people are dead after getting caught in dangerous conditions on Lake Michigan.
A 16-year-old boy swimming with his stepbrother presumably drowns on this unguarded beach at Conneaut Township Park during a swimming advisory.
And we have some breaking news to get started. The search continuing right now for two men who are missing in Lake Michigan after high waves swept them off a pier in Sheboygan.
And that's just a few from this summer. Those news reports highlight a disturbing pattern across the Great Lakes. Researchers say that powerful currents have caused at least 152 drownings since 2002, and those currents can appear suddenly.
The wind is key. It can start out pretty calm. Pretty soon it picks up, and then, you know, you're out there just enjoying the beach, and you're not really thinking about it, and all of a sudden, man, the waves have come way up from what they were when you first started.
That's Mark Breederland, an educator with Michigan Sea Grant, a university program focused on preserving Great Lakes resources through education and research. When a drowning happens, people often attribute it to an undertow. Scientists say it's much more complicated than that. There are three main types of deadly currents in the Great Lakes. First, there are structural currents, which run along piers or breakwalls.
Depending on the angle of the wind coming in and what direction the waves are pushing you, that can be a very dangerous area.
Those currents develop because a lot of structures throughout the Great Lakes are solid all the way to the lake bottom. In the ocean, many piers are supported by big stilts, allowing water to move underneath. Powerful currents can also develop in open water.
Waves can actually come along the shore, and they can form longshore currents, which go up and down the lake shore. They could break through a sandbar and actually come back with the wave return, in a sense, being a rip, and it could actually knock you off your feet.
That's not all there is to worry about. A seiche is the Great Lakes version of a tidal wave. Imagine a lake as a giant bathtub, with strong winds pushing water back and forth, gathering strength. In 1844, a 14-foot seiche in Lake Erie resulted in the deaths of 78 people. And in 2003, a seiche in Lake Michigan resulted in one deadly 4th of July, says National Weather Service meteorologist Megan Dodson.
People thought that it was safe to go back in the water because the waves weren't that high. They were only about 2 to 3 feet. But since we had that additional factor of the water fluctuating, they went into the water and there was rip currents and they were really strong. And we lost 7 people in a 5-hour period.
Dodson maintains a life and death count of the current's impact. It's called the Great Lakes Dangerous Currents Database. Since 2002, there have been 480 incidents, rescues or fatalities, caused by a current. The database helps Dodson find patterns and better predict when currents are likely. Based on those conditions, the National Weather Service sets beach forecasts for all five of the Great Lakes. But there are limitations, says Dotson, beginning with how she gets her information.
We'll look through the media articles and say, okay, was there a rescue or a fatality? If so, is it related to currents?
Dotson relies on news reports because there isn't an official government reporting system in place to track these incidents. She acknowledges the database may undercount the number of drownings. The database started in 1998 after 12-year-old Travis Brown died. He got caught in a rip current on Lake Michigan.
Prior to that incident, people really didn't think that rip currents could happen on the Great Lakes.
According to the database, there have been fewer current-related drownings in recent years. That may be due to better education about dangerous waves, or simply to colder summers. Dotson notes that because of the warm summer this year, it may be difficult to sustain the trend. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Elizabeth Miller.
And that's reporter Elizabeth Miller, who produced a four-part series for Great Lakes Today on drowning and the risk of drowning in the Great Lakes. And she joins us from IdeaStream in Cleveland. Elizabeth, your next story we're going to hear in this series is set at Silver Beach, which a lot of people know here in southwest Michigan. Tell us what brought you to St. Joseph in Berrien County.
So one of those other reporting systems that exist for tracking Great Lakes drownings is the Great Lakes Dangerous Current Incident Database from Michigan Sea Grant and NOAA. And so they look at news reports, so the numbers might not be completely accurate, but they're as accurate as we have. They track drownings from dangerous currents. And so I looked at their numbers, and Berrien County was the highest number of drowning deaths in the whole of the Great Lakes. And those happen at beaches all over St. Joseph, all over Berrien County itself. But going to Silver Beach was one of the biggest beaches in southwest Michigan, so I wanted to start there.
And one of the things we find out in your report, and people around here would know this, is that it's one of the few beaches that you can visit around here, and there will be lifeguards present. So how do those two things mesh up then, that we have this area which seems to be more dangerous, and yet, there's lifeguards? You know, we would think that lifeguards would make it safer, right?
Right. I mean, we would hope so. But what I found out when I got there, really, and I wasn't really sure until I got to Berrien County and Silver Beach, was that so many of these drowning deaths are due to jumping off of piers, which are right next to Silver Beach, are the two in Berrien County. And so jumping off the piers, there's no lifeguards present. It's out of their zone. So you get caught in these structural currents that are along the piers. And that's where all the danger is. I talked to Ron Olson, who's chief of parks for all of Michigan, and he expressed kind of that same thing, that lifeguards wouldn't really help these drowning deaths as much as you would hope.
The far majority from our experience has been the self-inflicted circumstances that they've done that are ill-advised, that really have nothing much to do with what a lifeguard could do at a beach.
Elizabeth, I don't want to give too much of your report away. One of the things we're going to hear, though, is that, of course, there is the pier structure there, and piers can present a risk. Also, one of the things that you tell us in this report is that if someone is going to drown, it's very likely going to be a man, correct?
Yes. Very surprising. I just hadn't thought about it, thought about what the demographics of drowning victims are. But yes, I'm giving away some of the story. 80% of the victims in the Michigan Sea Grant database were male. At least when I talked to the meteorologist there, she said it's a question of overconfidence. And also the problem of people going in to save someone. That's often a man.
All right, Elizabeth, stand by. We are going to hear from you one more time, but we also are going to hear the final two parts in your series on drownings in the Great Lakes, produced for Great Lakes Today. Elizabeth Miller joining us from IdeaStream in Cleveland. Berrien County, like a lot of southwest Michigan, is a tourist destination because of its beautiful beaches and 50 miles of Lake Michigan shoreline. But the community also has an unusual concentration of drownings from dangerous currents.
Berrien has 50 miles of shoreline, and its crown jewel is Silver Beach County Park. It's straight out of a postcard. Sandy beaches, a playground, and a big concession stand selling snow cones and hot dogs. Brian Bailey manages the park. a popular spot for Midwesterners who don't want to make the long trip to the ocean.
We're at the lower portion of Lake Michigan. We're near major population urban areas of Chicago, Detroit, Indianapolis. We're a very attractive summer playground for many people.
But mix in some bad weather with all those visitors and...
We get the combination of inexperienced swimmers, storms that can come up at any time, and wave height, and those can be some dangerous conditions.
Since 2002, powerful currents have led to at least 21 deaths and 29 rescues at parks in the county, according to a database maintained by researchers. The wind also plays a role, says the National Weather Service's Megan Dodson.
When you have really strong winds blowing from the west or the northwest or the southwest, that causes the water to pile up near the beaches on western Michigan. You'll get better water piling up. You have a better chance for currents to develop.
Haley Smoot is head lifeguard at Silver Beach.
We have a lot of out-of-town people that don't understand the lake and how it works, and they come and they expect it to be like a swimming pool, and it's not.
And then there's the pier jumping. There are two piers in the county, both near Silver Beach, but they're out of the lifeguard zone. Several drownings are attributed to people jumping off the piers. They were built in the 1800s and are owned by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Christopher Schropp, Chief of Construction and Survey at the Army Corps Office in Grand Haven, Michigan, says the piers are still important.
The purpose of the pier structures is for federal navigation, shipping within the federal navigation channels. The piers allow the ships to enter the harbor safely, carrying whatever product they have, aggregate, coal, iron ore.
These days, the piers are also used recreationally. You can fish or just walk on them. Schropp says while it's unfortunate that jumping accidents happen, making the piers unavailable to the public is not an option.
We certainly don't want to close the structures because there's a lot of visitors that enjoy them. I don't know that that would go over very well, and people find their way around it anyways.
The County Sheriff's Department can't ticket or fine anyone jumping off the pier, but Sergeant Kristen Robbins is hoping for such a solution.
I hope that it can only go that direction to where pier jumping would become illegal.
Officials have taken steps to prevent drownings. The piers have warning signs and throw rings in case of emergency. Silver Beach has emergency phones stationed around the property. And there's one thing Silver Beach has that many other beaches in Berrien County don't: lifeguards. That includes Warren Dunes State Park and all of Michigan State Parks. Ron Olson, Chief of Parks for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, says there are a couple of reasons why.
It costs a lot of money to equip lifeguards. Further, you need to have experienced people.
Warren Dunes got rid of lifeguards more than 30 years ago. Since 2002, five people have drowned there because of dangerous currents, according to the database. On days when there are dangerous currents, Warren Dunes flies a red flag. The image on the flag depicts a swimmer with a line through it. No swimming due to currents. Olson says the signs and flags serve as a warning. The state is working to make the signs more accessible, too. Braille for the blind, words are an image for the colorblind, and signs in other languages. Olson says the state is not responsible if an accident occurs, and that having lifeguards wouldn't make a difference. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Elizabeth Miller.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today, we're bringing you a four-part series on drownings in the Great Lakes. With lifeguards, warning signs, 911 phones, and education efforts, beaches across the Great Lakes are preparing for emergencies. But how effective are these safety measures in cutting the number of drownings? Elizabeth Miller of IdeaStream in Cleveland reports.
On a recent sunny afternoon on Lake Michigan, people are enjoying the cool waters of Warren Dunes State Park, despite a large red flag flying above the crowd. The flag means no swimming due to dangerous currents. But the park has no lifeguards, so there's no one to enforce the ban. And Pam Schutz of Illinois and Ryan Sincroft of Indiana still plan to go into the lake.
We know there's no lifeguards, so we kind of police each other and kind of keep tabs on where they are. We just won't go that far, so we don't have to worry about the riptides or anything like that.
Especially since the red flags are up and we've heard the warnings, you know, we're kind of playing it cautious today. So, I mean, obviously, and a lifeguard would be ideal, but I understand the cost and everything associated with that, too.
None of the Great Lakes is well represented in terms of having lifeguards trained for rescues in dangerous currents. The United States Life Saving Association, which certifies open water lifeguard agencies around the country, only has 33 Great Lakes chapters. The association's Tom Gill says that's not enough.
Any beach that is publicized as a tourist destination where they're collecting revenue from people that are coming there, we feel there's a responsibility to protect the people that are going to those beaches.
The Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project tries to increase the safety of beachgoers by holding water safety trainings for people of all ages, even 3- and 4-year-olds.
We show pictures of animals, and we learn from the animals.
Bob Pratt is the organization's executive director.
In the springtime, you'll see ducklings, and you'll see a whole, you know, family of ducklings always staying very close to their mother, especially when there might be danger around.
Coast Guard units play a role in education, too, sending teams into schools to explain how to survive a powerful current. And then there's the effort to get surfers, kayakers, and non-swimmers to pay attention to what's going on around them. The Surf Rescue Project says everyday objects that float, things like footballs or plastic coolers, can be used to help people struggling against a dangerous current. For someone caught in a rip current, the worst thing to do is fight it. The key is to flip over onto your back, float, and follow the current until the rescue team arrives. Pratt says flip, float, follow is easy to understand and similar to another safety slogan.
You grab any one of the elementary age kids from the beach and ask them what to do if their clothing catches on fire. They will yell out, stop, drop, and roll. Ask them what to do if they get in trouble in the water, and you will hear mumbling and silence.
Some beaches have signs to explain what a dangerous current is and flags to prohibit lake use in hazardous conditions. But it's difficult to know what prevention tactics are working and who's even listening. Pratt says the beachgoers who pay attention to those signs are the ones who probably understand the dangers already. It's like preaching to the choir, he says. As far as the perfect solution, Pratt has an idea.
Lifeguards at all of our public beaches. Combine that with water safety curriculum in our school system, and I think we would see very dramatic decrease in the number of drownings that happen on the Great Lakes.
According to the Great Lakes Dangerous Current Incident Database, there's an obvious target audience. Drowning victims are 80% male, and half of the drownings happened near a structure, like a pier. Despite the safety measures, Pratt says the number of drownings in the Great Lakes is up compared to last year. In 2016 bears a similarity weather-wise to 2012, when the Surf Rescue Project tallied 101 deaths, many of them due to dangerous currents. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Elizabeth Miller.
And that is the four-part series on drownings in the Great Lakes, produced for Great Lakes Today by reporter Elizabeth Miller. She joins us from IdeaStream in Cleveland. Let me ask you about Bob Pratt there in your story, who says he'd like to see lifeguards at all beaches. Now, we talked a little bit earlier about how maybe that wouldn't prevent certain drownings, but is there any real chance that Bob Pratt's idea would become reality anyway?
Well, it's nice to think about, and it makes people feel safe, but at least in Michigan, it's not going to happen. As previously stated in one of the reports, Michigan State Parks got rid of their lifeguards 30 years ago, and more for some of the other parks. And the chief of parks, Ron Olson, says it's a matter of numbers, too.
You need to have experienced people, and right now, in today's world, it's difficult to get enough lifeguards that are trained properly, particularly in larger bodies of water.
All right, so cost is going to be prohibitive for putting lifeguards everywhere, but one of the other components that people talked about in your stories is education. What's being done to educate swimmers, and could there be more?
Well, first, there's the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, and they've really gone out to the Great Lakes states, Great Lakes areas, and just tried to, I think Bob Pratt said, spread the gospel of water safety. And there's a couple other organizations doing the same thing, as well as Coast Guard stations and other things like that. Lazaro Lopez from Coast Guard Station St. Joseph in Michigan actually said that his Coast Guard station goes out to schools.
We send our teams out all throughout the years to elementaries, middle schools, high schools, anyone that can listen. And we try to educate about what to do if you get stuck in a rip current.
So, Elizabeth, any final thoughts here as you kind of look back on this series and the issue of drownings in the Great Lakes? Is there maybe just a one-sentence takeaway that you would want the listener to have about these stories?
I just think the key there is safety. The key is to be safe in the water and know your limits, and also know the waters better. And I think that's a big part that's missing, is that people don't really know what the Great Lakes are capable of. They think, oh, it's just a small little lake. It's actually so much more. And I hope that from the series, people take that away and understand better, and maybe we can reduce those numbers.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for sharing your reporting with us and for making some time to talk to us about it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Elizabeth Miller. She joined us from IdeaStream in Cleveland. She produced a four-part series on drownings in the Great Lakes for Great Lakes Today. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm has emerged as one of the top campaign surrogates for Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. Granholm has been a Clinton supporter since her first presidential run in 2008. Now she's been named a co-chair of the Clinton transition team. Granholm spoke with the Michigan Public Radio Network's Capitol Bureau Chief Rick Pluta about her responsibilities and the presidential campaign.
Governor Granholm, thanks for joining us. So you were recently named as a co-chair of the Hillary Clinton transition team, should she be elected president in November. And we should also point out there is also a Donald Trump, a Republican transition team. In fact, there is a federal law that encourages this for the sake of stability between administrations. So what are the responsibilities of this team pre-November?
Well, it's interesting because there was a law that was passed in 2012, which gave a little bit of resources to both to whoever the presidential general election nominees would be for either party. And so the General Services Administration opens up two floors of a building in Washington, D.C., one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans, to be able to begin planning their transition. And in any presidential campaign, you have to be able to, one, take the candidate's promises on the campaign trail and turn them into reality, or at least plan for that process. Two, you have to make sure you identify the right people to fill the positions to make those promises come true. And three, you've got to review how the government is currently structured and what changes you want to make. And so the transition teams plan for that. Before the election, it's a very skeleton effort because you want to make skeletal effort because you want to make sure, obviously, that people are focused on getting the candidate elected. After the election, it really blows up to a full-blown, we have got to plan for a whole new transition of power, and particularly to make those promises reality in the first 100 days, the ones that she has publicly pledged to do.
So what does a co-chair do? And in particular, what are your responsibilities as a co-chair?
Well, on Clinton's team, there's one chair, Ken Salazar, the former Secretary of the Interior, a former senator from Colorado, and someone with whom I served as Attorney General because he was the Attorney General of Colorado back in the day. And then there are four co-chairs. I'm one of the co-chairs, and my portfolio will include the things that I'm passionate about, which includes jobs, energy, advanced manufacturing, small business, that kind of thing, and infrastructure. But everybody else does, has a slice of it. And so making sure that those promises are carried out in the areas that I'm overseeing is what I'm going to be focused on.
And what do you need to be focused on in those areas?
Making sure you know that what she has said will actually become law in, given the scenarios of what could happen in Congress. So planning for that is really what we are looking at. But as I say, it's very, it's a very bare bones effort at the start, and then it will ramp up afterward.
Now, I can't let you go without asking this. Would you like a role in a Clinton administration? And if so, what would it be? What do you see yourself doing if Hillary Clinton is elected president?
I have not had a single discussion with anybody on the Clinton team about this. This is totally not my focus. My focus is wanting to get her elected. So I'm uncomfortable talking about any future for me when really what I want to focus on is getting her elected.
Understood. But I know you're a planner. What would you like to do?
I I'm not going there, Rick. I'm really not. It's just not my focus. It's a hypothetical. We got to get her elected.
Governor Granholm, thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Thanks.
That was former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm speaking with the Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta. A longer version of that interview can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.